Good evening and welcome to the Brexville-Broadview Heights High School Auditorium this 12th of December 2016 for our regular meeting of the school board. It's a meeting in public to conduct the school district's business. There is a time for public participation during the meeting as an indicated agenda item. Welcome. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bernauer.
Yes.
Mr. Dosen.
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler.
Yes.
Mrs. Mack.
Yes.
Mr. Jansen.
Yes. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Item three on the agenda is community communications, hearing of the public. Persons wishing to address the Board of Education may do so at this point. No formal action will be taken on subjects that are not included on the agenda until the board has had an opportunity to study them. Comments regarding personnel must be submitted in writing through the office of the superintendent. We limit people to 3 minutes and...
Mark, are we doing 2B and C?
Excuse me.
Never mind.
I'm learning my ABCs and how to stay in order. Item 2B, probably the single most important thing on the agenda this evening, is the awards for the state champion, Brexville-Broadview Heights girls volleyball team, as well as some of other our sports teams.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you to the Board of Education for allowing me to be here tonight. It's certainly an honor, and I'm just so proud to be associated with these fine student athletes. The first young man that we'd like to recognize is our cross-country state qualifier, Mr. Anthony Camerari. Coach Shank, come on up here too, please. Anthony finished 61st in the state of Ohio. At first glance, that may not seem like much, but at the state meet, there's 186 runners, and there are thousands of cross-country runners in the state of Ohio. I mean, it's an amazing accomplishment. Thing about Anthony that I find so impressive, if anyone knows anything about running, especially distance running, it's really a mental sport. And you're always battling yourself and overcoming your own limitations that you put in your own mind. And Anthony is a junior. He overcame a very serious leg injury as a sophomore. And, again, had that stick-to-itiveness and that determination and that drive to overcome all of these things, and I'm just so impressed. I'm honored to be associated with him, and the other thing that's so impressive, he has a 3.8 GPA cumulative. The other gentleman has everything to do with this, and again, I'm proud and honored to work with him and be associated with him. His coach, Coach Bob Shank.
Really, it starts with his parents. Great parents that, institute hard work and discipline with the academics, obviously, as well. But yes, Anthony overcame a loss of his freshman track season from an injury and his sophomore year of cross. So he came bouncing back, literally, and had a tremendous finish. Ran 16:11 as his all-time best at the Galleon meet. And at the state meet, to run within 3 seconds of your state, of his personal record was quite impressive. So, and along with his academics, he earned academic All Ohio. So, tremendous young man, he leads by example. Glad he's on our team. He's with us for another year and a half with track and cross, and excited to be working with him. But a great young man. Thank you.
Thank you. Our second group is our girls Division I OHSAA state championship volleyball team. Now, people are asking me, kids are asking me all the time, Mr. Mascalona, how can I get better at my sport? How can I make the team this year? How can I become a starter? And my answer is always the same to every one of those kids, be a great teammate. And I say that because that encompasses everything that we do. You're on time, you're prepared, you're encouraging others, you don't get down when things don't go well, you're always playing and trying your best. All of these things make a great teammate, but that's what makes you better individually as well. And that's what I see and what I think of every time I think of this group. Yeah, we had great players. We have the best players in the state. We have players that are better than everybody else. However, 1 through 15, and I mean from 15 down, we had great teammates. And that's what made us win this championship this year. Again, I repeat myself, but I am so proud and honored to be associated with these girls and this coach. I can't even tell you. I want to introduce their head coach, Mr. Rob Klein.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you guys for having us here and honoring us. I know there's a lot you guys have to get to tonight, so I'll be brief. RTS is our motto, right, Shan? Road to States. All year we talked about it. I've had teams before we talked about we'd like to go to state, but with this group, they believed from the beginning. And I knew we could get there, I just didn't know if we could pull it off, and we did. So very proud of them. We also said road to Senate when we went to Columbus with the Ohio State Senate. That was fun, and I guess now it's road to stage. So RTS continues. But just, it was great run with these kids, and like Mark said, great teammates, just a lot of support from the community, from their parents, from the administration, all of that. It's just great to see when we finally won, all the people, you know, excited. We hear about the stories from people watching or following it online. So we'll get to the part where you guys want to see. If you're here and I call your name, come on down. I got my list still, or roster. All right, Junior Shannon Williams. Come on down. Freshman Sophia Sesniak. Senior Christina Merker. Sophomore Hallie Wiglis. Senior Abby Barth. Sophomore Marissa Raycheck. Senior Jasmine Dukes. Junior Emily Bushaheen. Sophomore Joanna Chang. Junior Amber King. Sophomore Caroline Smith. Senior Sydney Oswald. Junior Katie Williamson. Freshman Kayla Mancuso. We also had some help from senior Alyssa Thur and freshman Caitlin Merker. My assistant coaches, both teachers, I got my blue shirt on, Amy Dubasak, Dana Del Torio. And our AD, Mark Mascalona. Thank you.
That's my son's best friend, Anthony Cameron. Oh, yeah. Good evening. I'm Maria Schneider, if you do not know who I am. And I'm here to recognize two girls that have done a fabulous job with our Fuel Up to Play 60 program. Fuel Up to Play 60 was started a few years back. I think Al Siebert, when he was on the Board of Ed, signed up the school district and sent it to our school. And after a few years, I think when Avery was in middle school, I thought, let's give it a go and see what happens. So we started with a group of kids that would meet and talk about ways that we could help increase wellness in our school district inside and outside the classroom. So two students tonight we're honoring, and thank you very much for this honor to recognize them. First is Heather Williamson, who couldn't be here tonight. But over the summer, these students who are now in high school have been continuing working on their developing their leadership skills outside of the classroom and helping to find ways to fuel greatness. And Heather was a recipient of a $1,500 grant for our school district for a farm to school initiative. And the check should have arrived this week or next, they said. It was en route. And her hope is that that money could be used towards making smoothies to offer here at the high school first, and then maybe trickle down in the future. And she earned $1,500 from Land O'Lakes. So I just want to recognize, Heather couldn't get a ride here. She just texted me, so I apologize. I would have gone and picked her up if I could. So Heather Williamson was one we were going to recognize. And the yes, you have to come up here, Avery. And this girl has changed my, she gave me a lot of hope in life again about like seeing that young excitement of motivation to want to make a difference in the world. Avery Diedrich, starting in eighth grade with Fuel Up to Play 60 in our groups that we would meet once a week, she became state ambassador. That year we got to go to the governor's inauguration day. She spoke at the NFL combine last year, and she has just continued to be a voice for great wellness in the country now. She's one of 15 students on the youth council that helps run the entire Fuel Up to Play 60 national organization, which I think is just an amazing feat. And Avery, I'm so proud of you and everything you've done. And Avery will be on the youth council for Fuel Up to Play 60 and help other young students continue and learn to grow in their leadership skills at their summits and weekly, monthly phone calls, all of the above. She's doing this all outside her academic day. She's working these, and she's in AP classes, and I couldn't be more happy and honored to recognize you tonight, Avery Diedrich.
Thanks again to the coaches, the sponsors, and to the student athletes and student participants themselves. It's really a lot of fun when we get to honor kids like that because there's tons of them in our school district. The third item under item two is our triad survey results presentation. As you probably recall, last meeting we mentioned we had just received the information, the raw data from Triad Consulting that we had contracted to do a statistically accurate survey of our school district with respect to the upcoming need for new money levy, and also some other things going on in our district that are of great importance. Joelle, if I'd like to turn it over to you.
I'd like to introduce Bob from Triad. He's going to do a presentation tonight on our survey results for us.
Thank you very much for having me here this evening. My name is Bob Dykes. I'm with the Triad Research. My partner Kathy actually did most of the work on this survey, but she had a long planned vacation this week, so you're stuck with me. What I'm going to do is to go through the highlights of the findings of the survey for you. Let me just take 1 second to go through the methodology, just very lightly. This is a telephone survey. We did both landlines and cell phones, and it's 351 registered voters in the school district. And we looked at the past election results to see how the votes were distributed across both Brecksville and the part of Broadview Heights in the district. We distributed our calls in that way, and basically in each sub area of the district, we randomly picked phone numbers to be called. So no one gave us any names and said, call these people, these are the people you need to talk to, or don't call this other person that we don't want to hear from them. So there was none of that in this. The margin of error is about 5% at the 95% confidence level. To give you some frame of reference, in the presidential election that was just concluded, the surveys of the entire country that you might have seen on CNN or Fox are typically about 1,500 people for the entire country. So we had 350 in this school district. This is this is actually a pretty good sample. It's typical of what we do. Our company has done hundreds of these surveys over the time that we've been in business. And we did this survey not long ago, as you can see, in November. There were basically three purposes of the survey. We're looking at some basic opinions toward the schools by the people who live in the district. We wanted to assess some attitudes toward a possible operating levy and the reasons for voting for or against that potential levy. And then finally, we wanted to examine the voters' perceptions of some of the school buildings in the district. One of the key findings of the survey is that the voters feel informed about what's going on in the schools, and they have a very positive opinion of the educational quality in the Brecksville Broadview High School district. This graph shows you the educational quality rating. We ask people to choose whether the quality of education is excellent, good, only fair, or poor. And as you can see, about two-thirds of the people we spoke to said the quality of education was excellent, and about a fourth said that the quality of education was good, and almost no one said anything else. Very, very small responses for only fair, poor, or not sure. As you might expect, people who had kids in the schools were more likely to give the schools an excellent rating because they have a more direct connection and are more knowledgeable, as we will see, about the schools than those who don't have kids in the schools. And indeed, we asked people how informed they were about the schools, and we can see that 85% were either very or somewhat well informed about the schools. And there's a big difference between parents and non-parents. People who have kids in the school, 61% said that they were very informed, whereas only 27% of non-parents said that. So there's some difference here between the two top two categories. But the number of people who said they were not very or not at all informed is, again, relatively small. So those are, by the way, those are both, again, we've done many, many school districts, but those are both very, very good ratings. It's rare to see a district get a rating of over 60% excellent, as this school district does. We asked people where they got their sources of information, and you can see that most voters rely on what we call third-party sources, that is to say, not directly from the school district or directly from their children, but from other sources, principally the news media, the Sun newspapers, and et cetera. That's what we see there. The parents were more likely to get information both from school sources and from non-school sources. This is not an unusual result for a survey like this. I might say that the district, you know, could perhaps do a little bit more to try to become the primary source of information, but this is not an unusual result. We asked people what kind of a job they thought the schools were doing in using the tax money they received, whether they agreed or disagreed with the statement that the schools do a good job. And you can see that well over 60% thought that the schools agreed that the schools did do a good job, and the disagreement with that statement was less than 20%, and there was only a small percentage who don't know. Again, we've asked this question in many districts. This certainly is a good rating. We note here that the later on we're going to talk about how people voted on a possible levy, and the people who voted against the levy were divided on this question. And that's not unusual. But even there, even the people who said they were voting against the levy, almost half thought that the school district did a good job of using the money it was getting. We asked, as I said, about a possible levy, and a majority said that they would support an additional levy for the schools. But as we will see, while this is a good finding, it will be, in our opinion, a challenge to pass the issue. Now, what you see on this chart are actually two votes. What we do in the survey is we ask people almost at the very beginning of the survey how they might vote on a levy. And here we were asking about a levy of 6 mils for a continuing period of years. And then we go through a whole bunch of information, some positive, some potentially negative, about the school district. And then we ask people to vote again. Both times, a majority of people said that they would vote for the levy, 53% the first time, 57% the second time. I'll tell you, that actually looks very favorable, and it is, because the percentage voting against was much less. But we asked people if they would definitely vote for, probably vote for, probably vote against, or definitely vote against. You really can't count on all the people who said, "I'll probably vote for the levy." No school district ever gets all of those people at the end of the day to vote for the levy. So the fact that you're at 53, including the probabilities, says that you need to reinforce those people. You need to communicate with them and move them from being probably for to definitely for the levy. And that, of course, is the function of the campaign. The good news in this chart is that the percentage voting for went up from 53 to 57. The bad news is the percentage voting against also went up, and it went up a little more. And that is not, that happens, but it doesn't happen that often. So clearly, people heard things in the course of the interview, and we'll go through some of the survey, that they liked, and they heard some things, perhaps, that they did not. This graph shows a combination, if you will, of the two vote questions. The strong for voters are those who voted definitely for both times. The weak for voters are those who voted probably for once or twice and maybe definitely for once. The move positive voters are those who didn't start out voting for the levy, but their vote moved in a positive direction by the second vote. The move negative voters started out voting for the levy, but their vote moved in a negative direction. And as you can see, the move negative voters are, again, as big as the move positive voters. And there were some people who were undecided both times or who voted against the levy both times. So given that you're certain to get the strong four voters and the weak four, the strong four and the weak four are only 50, given that you're not going to get all the weak four voters, you're going to need some of the move positives. So that's why we said it in the earlier slide. The results are good, they're favorable, but there's also a challenge here to run a really good campaign in order to win this levy. We asked about the cost of the levy, which is going to be $35 a month for a person owning a $200,000 home. And the cost is a strong negative reason, a reason for voting no. 45% of the move negative or undecided voters were less likely to vote for the levy when they were told of the cost, as were 78% of the against voters. So in our opinion, I mean, and this is obviously, we're not the board, I don't live in the district, I'm just offering you a suggestion. In our opinion, it would help with the voters to reduce the cost of the levy even slightly. Making the levy, we asked about a continuing levy. So we took the people who voted no, and we asked them how a five-year levy, if the levy were only for 5 years, what would that do to increase their support? It does very little to increase their support. The reason, there are several reasons for this. One is, in focus groups we've done, voters tell us that once a tax is passed, it never goes away. So even though you say 5 years, they don't really believe it's only going to be for 5 years. The voters believe that it will, you know, at the end of 5 years, you'll come back and ask for it again. And the other thing we have to be aware of in looking at this result, which minimizes it even more, is we asked about a continuing levy and then about a five-year levy. Well, given those two choices, some people would prefer five. But in the voting booth, they won't have those two choices. They would only have one or the other. So I really believe that, based upon other research that we've done in the past, that the percentage of that you would gain by going to a five-year levy would be less than 4%. The schools will have to tell the voters why a new levy is needed. Now, let me take just a moment. We read a statement to people, and we asked them if they agree or disagree. And the statement was, the schools have enough money now to provide students with a quality of education they don't need anymore. Well, if you think the schools need more money, you have to disagree with that statement. You have to say, no, the schools don't have enough money. I disagree. Well, what percent disagree? 37. So only 37% of the voters currently now think that the schools need more money. So the biggest job the schools have in this campaign is to convince people of the need for additional dollars for the schools. We will see some strong arguments that do that, but you're starting out at a point where 49% say you have enough money now, and another 15% are undecided, and only 37% think that you need more money. Affordability is something we saw the cost the numbers. We also read the statement, I'd like to vote for a school levy, but I can't afford to pay any more money. Now, 56% disagreed, which means 56% said they could afford to pay more money. But the question is, do they think they could afford to pay $35 a month? That's so it isn't that people are against paying anything. It's that the cost of $35 a month is something for some people to take into account. So that's why we made our recommendation that perhaps the schools would be better off if they could make at least a modest reduction in the levy itself. Another key finding is that, as I said, we need to establish the need for the levy, and we think that there are several good arguments that, in fact, do help the district to establish that need. And there are three, and here they are. It's been 12 years since the schools passed a local levy for additional operating money. Since 2012, the state has cut funding to the schools by more than $8 million. And as a result, the schools reduced staff, purchasing, busing, and increased student fees. And finally, if the levy fails, the school district will have to make even more spending cuts to balance the budget. You can see that the way we ask this question is whether knowing that would make them more likely to vote for the levy or less likely, or make no difference. Well, you can see 38%, 48%, 49%, and 48% said it would make them more likely to vote for the levy. Only a few percent said less likely, and then some said no difference. So together, these three arguments tell a story, if you will, and really begin and lay the foundation, a strong foundation for the case that the schools indeed need this extra money. One of the things we looked at was one of the questions voters frequently have is, okay, if I give you more money, what are you going to do with it? And so one of the ways we ask this question is we tell people some of the ways that the money from the levy will be used and ask them whether it's a very good use of the money, just good, in other words, okay, but nothing special, or not very good. In other words, in a sense, the voters are saying, I wouldn't use the money in that way. Well, there are three arguments where over half the voters thought, or three ways of spending the money, where over half the voters said, this is a very good use of the money. One is to add more STEM programs that help students be prepared for jobs in the future. Another was to teach students critical thinking skills, work collaboratively, and other skills required for 21st century jobs. And the third was to expand the use of technology and other learning tools in the schools. All three of those are very good. The voters reacted very positively to all three of those. The voters have reacted positively, but not as much, to hiring and keeping good quality teachers by paying them competitive salaries, probably because they think you already do that. So I'm not making a statement here. I'm just saying what I think the voters might think. So that isn't necessarily a strong reason, but it's certainly a positive reason. There were two possible uses of the money that were actually negative. What do I mean by negative? I mean, more people thought they were not a good reason than they were a good reason. One was all-day kindergarten at no cost to parents. 39% said it wasn't good. Only 35% said it was. So it was actually slightly negative. And then reducing the amount students pay to participate in their extracurricular activities, 31% thought that it was good, but 43% thought that it was not very good. These arguments, spending the money this way and publicizing this would be counterproductive in terms of the letter. There are obviously a whole range of things that could be done. You could pay for a part of the cost of all-day kindergarten as opposed to all of the cost. Three-fourths of the voters think teacher salaries in the district are about right or too high. About almost half said the district that teacher salaries were about right. Only a small percentage thought that the salaries were too low. About 29% thought they were too high, and then 17% thought they were not sure. We've asked this question in other districts, and these results sort of, in some sense, fall in the middle. We've seen districts where the percentage that said too high was higher than this and lower than this, and where the percentage that said about right was higher and lower. So this is not an extreme result in either way. Given the previous slide, it would probably hurt chances of passing the levies if the voters were to perceive that all or almost all of the money from the levy was going for teacher salaries. There are three other arguments that are supporting arguments that the schools can make for the levy. I don't think they're as important as the three that I mentioned before about the 12 years or the state cuts, et cetera. These three are that two-thirds said it's very important to them to have the schools maintain its top quality rating with the state report card. Two-thirds also agreed the levy was needed so our children are prepared for college and careers and the changing workforce. And 88% agreed that high-quality schools are needed to keep our property values high. Why don't I think these arguments are as strong? Well, you can see that these arguments are all much stronger than the actual vote itself. So there are a substantial number of people who would agree with all three of these things and still vote no. So that's why I think it's good to remind people of these things, and these will help. But the key is still to establish the need for the levy and to use the three primary arguments that I mentioned earlier. Finally, we're going to come to the questions we asked about the school buildings. And our key finding was that most voters think that the district's buildings are in pretty good condition now, but they are willing to support an extension of a small bond issue that would not increase their taxes. Right now, two-thirds said that the district's school buildings that they're familiar with are in good condition or need only minor repair. Just 12% think the buildings need major repairs or to be replaced. And that's why we say that before any kind of capital campaign, the schools need to engage and inform the community about any problems or deficiencies that the buildings are having. We don't think the community really is aware of such deficiencies or problems at the moment. That being said, 92% are willing to support extending the district's $2 million bond issue, knowing that it would not increase their taxes. But only 45% are willing to support a small increase in the bond issue to possibly build one or two new elementary schools and make repairs and renovations at the other building. Why the big difference? I think there are two reasons. We've just seen people think the buildings are in good condition, and I think previously we saw that the district is fairly cost conscious. And I think this, again, reiterates the fact that even a small increase decreases the percentage of support dramatically. More voters favored than opposed, 43-29, closing one of the district's four elementaries, which would reduce operating costs. Also, more voters preferred spending $25 million to repair the existing elementaries that would last 25 years than spending $50 million to build two schools that would last 50 years. There's a percentage missing there. It should say 33% after the 50 years. I just noticed that today. So again, what we see here is some cost consciousness in the minds of the voters. They're willing to go with the $25 million rather than go with the $50. These attitudes differed by whether the voters have children in the schools or not. If they have children in the schools, for example, they were more likely to go for the 50-year option than the 25-year. In summary, we think that it'll be a challenge, that a 6-mil levy is doable, but it will be a challenge to pass it, and that it would help if the millage could be reduced even slightly to regain some support from the voters that we call the move negative voters, those that started out with a more positive opinion but moved negative over the course of the survey. The new levy must be firmly established, and as I repeatedly said, the schools have three arguments that will very much help to do this. The voters should be told the money will be used for the three strongest uses that were the STEM program, more technology, and teaching skills for the 21st century workplace. And then good secondary arguments are the desire to maintain the high state report card rating, prepare kids for college and careers, and keep property values high. That's a pretty quick, but I think fairly comprehensive view of the questions. We I don't think we left any questions out. We covered them all.
Thank you, Bob. Board, do you have any questions for Bob?
I don't think so.
You promised you'd ask me questions.
He did.
How much is significant for a slight reduction? Like, what would you say would be significant to move that percentage number?
Well, I think even if you could go down from 6 to 5.9 or 5.8, when you go to the gas station, you know, it never says, 3.30, it says 3.29.9 or 2.29.9 these days. I mean, why do all stores do that? Because it works. So, I mean, 5.9 is much less. The difference between 6 and 5.9, the perceived difference is greater than the real difference.
You know, on the finding for the pay to participate, is that really heavily weighted no on the no students?
Yes, you would think that's right. And of course, you know that 2/3 of the voters do not have any kids at home. So they're the majority, and you need their support as well as the parents' support. And again, you as the board have a range of things you can do there. You can leave it as it is, take it all away, or go someplace in between.
How much can we move some of these perceptions and numbers with education. I mean, for example, the numbers on permanent improvements and building a new building, or, you know, $25 million for 25 years, $50 million for 50 years. I mean, to some degree, we're a victim of our own success, where we've kept the buildings maintained. You don't see pictures and footage of buckets, you know, in hallways and leaky roofs, but yet the buildings are very old and in desperate need. But most people don't see that. So how much can we, could you potentially move some of these perceptions in voters with more education on our situation?
You can move them with more education, absolutely. But the thing to do with a capital issue is educate them before you put the issue on the ballot. Because if you're not asking them for money, then their mind is open. They want information. They want to know about the schools. So they're receptive to hearing what you have to say. As soon as you ask them for capital money, then a barrier goes up. Now they know you want the money. Now you're going to tell them the things. Now they're going to say to themselves, they're going to tell me the things that they might want me to vote yes on this thing. If you're telling them, if you're showing them, and I think show is exactly the right word. I think, you know, putting on your website, you know, pictures of the plumbing races, the roofs, the foundation, whatever, and say, you know, we're doing this study of the buildings in the district, and the voters deserve to know what we know. You know, and these buildings are aging, you know, and so forth. And I'll prepare you. It's a two-edged sword. When you paper over the problems the districts are, the buildings are having, you see survey results like this, where people say the buildings are in good condition. When you inform people about the problems the buildings are having, you're going to hear a certain number of people say, why did you let them get that? So be prepared for that. But you've got to go there. If you really want a substantial amount of capital money, then you have to show people what the condition of the buildings truly is.
Anything else? Thank you, Bob. I appreciate your time and your survey results and putting the presentation together for us.
My pleasure being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bob, thanks again for the work of Triad. We have a lot more investigation of your findings to do, of course. You know, I think what we see is we have a very engaged community. They're aware of efforts that have taken place. They're aware of many of the issues that we face on a month-to-month and year-to-year basis. They support the value of good education and a good school system to the community, whether they have students or not. We have a lot of work to do, and much of that falls in the area of communication, as Bob correctly pointed out. Just when you think you've communicated enough, you need to redouble it anyway. You know that as educators, you know that as parents. You know, the survey is valuable not because, you know, perhaps we saw a lot of this in the presidential election, that it enforces the one issue to one person that is most important, but it's valuable to the board because it tells us what our stakeholders, the voters, think, regardless of what we may think personally. And it also helps us shape what is going to become our levy campaign. So that's why this is a valuable expenditure of our time and effort, and I think we have a lot to learn from it. It's like deja vu all over again. I'm going to get to item 3 on the agenda now, which is hearing of the public. Rather than repeat that, I'll just summarize 3 minutes, 30 minutes. In the past, we have tried to answer some questions in person, real time. Sometimes that works well, sometimes less so. What we've done at the podium for anybody who wishes is if you'd like to write down your contact information and the question, we'd be happy to get back to you with a more thoughtful answer, let's put it that way. If anybody wishes to be heard, please come to the podium. Name and address, please.
Hi. it on? Okay. I'm Petra Laszlo. I reside at 8433 Timber Trail. I feel compelled to address the board for the second time in a few short months' time, and I will be very brief. I have some comments concerning kind of like a timeline, so bear with me as I rehash what is my understanding, and it'll end with a kind of a rhetorical question that I think we can all think about. So going back to June, the school year ended, the teachers' contracts expired, and we waited in the summer. You know, there were a few bargaining dates on the schedule, and then, you know, everybody went on vacation, and that excuse was invoked for not meeting for a longer period of time. And then the fall came, and there were, again, a couple dates on the calendar. We were told by Superintendent Mayar at the very first PSO meetings that actually the survey wouldn't go out to the public until negotiations were over, or that was the plan. So we waited again. I had a very informative meeting with her and Mr. Jansen at the end of September, and things seemed positive at that time. And from what I was aware, there was one more date on the calendar for a bargaining session in early October. Again, that came and went. We heard nothing. And then the survey came out, actually a week early from what was on the district calendar. Still, we were not settled with the teachers. So now we are at the crossroads where the levy has to go on the ballot. The you know, the filing deadline is coming up for May. And I'm concerned that we have not had any bargaining dates on the calendar for the past couple months, and I'm referring specifically to BEA. I understand BOSS had settled. And that's a huge concern of mine. I've been a resident here for 25 years, and during every levy campaign, the teachers have been an integral part in conjuring up support in the community, because they are the contacts of the community. They're the heart and soul of the school district. They're the ones who are knee-deep, you know, in the trenches every day, and they're the ones that the parents communicate with a lot and ask questions to. So I guess I just want to end with kind of a rhetorical question. And how can we count on the teacher's support in backing up this levy where we have our work cut out for us, as we just heard from this wonderful presentation, if their future is in limbo? So I just wanted to address this to the board. I understand you probably can't answer the question here. You have my contact information. So I just wanted to bring it up to you personally, because I think this is on the hearts and minds of many residents at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Matt Alba. I live at 7668 Winding Way, Brecksville, Ohio. Tonight I speak on behalf of the Brecksville Broadview Heights Education Association. You have heard me speak before as a parent, coach, homeowner, and as a teacher. For the last 29 years, I devoted my time and efforts to the needs of the community. Tonight I share the needs of my colleagues, because this board doesn't seem interested in talking with them. Last month at the November school board meeting, you voted in favor of pay raises for just about everyone except for the teachers. The classified administrative staff received new contracts with a raise. Raises went to the administrators, the building staff, including secretaries, aides, food service workers, and bus drivers. They all received a raise in pay retroactive to the first day of school of at least 1.5% for 2 years. They also received a one-time $500 education stipend. All this was in addition to any step increase to which they might have been entitled. Their salary schedules were not restructured. The teachers saw this action and hope that the district would finally focus on working out a reasonable deal so we could all shift our focus towards carrying out a successful levy campaign. So where are we with negotiations? BEA attempted an expedited process that the board cut short back in April. We waited months for dates that finally were scheduled for the end of June. We attempted a sidebar, which ended in mid-October with both parties agreeing to go back to the table with our teams. On October 25th, we requested dates for bargaining and made the same request again on December 8th. Finally, today, we receive potential dates for mid to late January. Again, this is probably a rhetorical question, but why did it take 6 weeks to simply acknowledge and respond? Mr. Jansen, you were quoted on November 22nd on Cleveland.com as saying that you had hoped to sign an agreement with the teachers before deciding whether to head to the ballot to prove that you had your fiscal house in order. How did you plan to get a signed deal when the parties weren't even meeting? Whose fault was that? Whose attorney failed to secure dates? Bill Pebble takes his orders from you, the board. Mr. Jansen, you are also quoted in the December 1st Sun News as saying that the district has spent less this year than he did in 2009. Freezing salaries and replacing senior staff with less expensive new teachers, if at all, definitely does keep expenses down. But to what end? Who will want to come to a district that expects the teachers to fund the district by gutting their salary schedule until they are structurally the lowest in the county? Now, I'm not here to bargain the details. That's not my job. That's what the teams do in the process. But I can communicate that my colleagues are frustrated and angry with this board because of your lack of interest in our welfare. Instead of timely bargaining with us so that we could receive an increase for the start of the year, you have yet to make us your priority. Although some members did receive a scheduled step increase, well over half received nothing and continue to receive no increase. I'm in the seventh year of a salary freeze, and my take-home pay has been cut by 4% by the State Pension Board. Imagine that. For the last 4 years, my take-home pay has been less each year. I bring home now less than I did in 2012 and 2013. Like everyone here, my health care costs have gone up, and yet I still hear nothing from you, my employer. It is both insulting and disheartening. What do we teachers have to do to draw your attention? We help this district earn award after award, and yet where's the respect, the recognition? You've already shown that everyone else in the district is worth at least 1.5%. Perhaps BBH teachers were worth it too. Thank you for your time.
My name's Paul Kelly. I live at 10837 Partridge Trail. There's a couple problems. First problem is there's a public that is uneducated about education. Their kids come to school. You deal with them. You do a great job, and you send them home. They don't think about the taxes. They don't think about the costs, and they're uneducated. And they're misinformed by statements that come out that this faculty is incredibly well paid. It's figures lying, liars figure. Yeah, if you go on paper, they are. Pay freeze, was it 7 years? That's being a violation of the public trust that you're put there to uphold. You have to keep the public informed in a very honest manner. Because of that, it's going to be incredibly difficult to get a levy done, especially over this summer when I sat and listened to board members say, I campaigned against it. The biggest problem you have is education is like, it's a lot like coaching. If you played baseball, you think you can coach. If you played football, you think you can coach. Everyone sat in a classroom. Everyone thinks they can do their job. If you don't want to do theirs, I invite you to do mine. I teach at Shaker. Come on in. You can take my AP class or my freshman class. Have fun. And I'll talk to you about differentiation and everything that they do every day. I think they're entitled to cost of living. But the biggest problem that this board is going to face now is the public's been educated that they don't deserve anything. I know at Shaker, we got 3% this year. My pay going home went down, and we got 3%. The saddest part of coming up here is I'm going to leave here very disenfranchised, very dissatisfied, because they really have nothing left to do, because it doesn't sound like negotiations are really happening. So what's left for the teachers of this district other than a word I don't even want to use? That scares me. That's not why I came to Brecksville. Thank you.
I'm Elaine Baskert. I live at 9422 Highland Drive and have since 1987.
I really wish we weren't here tonight discussing this. We all should be home with our families. I hate the fact that in addition to what we do all day, because we're passionate about it, we have to come here and argue for just respect. But I have two comments that have come up. I wasn't planning on speaking. The first one is to Mr. Jansen and to the board. It concerns me that you asked people to leave their contact information so that you could give them a more thoughtful response. As a citizen in this community, I feel slighted having come to this meeting to know that there's going to be another conversation, not public. So I'm asking if the board can somehow figure out a way, when you do contact those people, to at least have the BEA come, or a representative from someone else, so that we are also educated. Because then when people come to the meeting and have questions, they're told that they don't know enough, they haven't done their homework. But if there's conversations going on that we're not privy to, how can we know everything? So in an effort to educate the public, I'm asking you to figure out a way to do that instead of having private meetings with people that talk. I think it would benefit the whole cause, especially with the levy. My other question is about the Triad group. I don't know enough about them. I've seen them. When we first moved here, they did a survey about building something in Broadview Heights. I know nothing more about them. My question is, Bob was being asked questions about running a campaign and millage amounts. Is their expertise in education, running campaigns for school boards? Is it research in general? I just am concerned that he is being asked questions about millage when his expertise, I thought, was research. So again, I don't know the specifics, I understand that, but would you please at least consider contacting someone other than Triad, districts that have passed levies, people that have support in their community for the schools, to really help us all get together and make it work, not just say, this is what the people said, this is what we're limited by. Let's make this work and make it a win-win. I would just ask you to do that. We are all willing to work together to do that. Thank you.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Denise Schwartle, 6760 Old Royalton Road, 30 years in the school district, counselor at Central School. Last board meeting, I did not plan to speak, but I did speak, and I left thinking more and more about what I said and what the response was. And I don't expect a response because I know that's not the format. But I continue to have two concerns that are related but different. Concern number one is that at the last meeting, I was perplexed by the response to my question about a relief to families when it comes to pay to participate. I was told that a levy, which serves to provide money for operating expenses, is a separate issue. That was made very clear to me that there are separate issues. I don't understand this, especially after I see that you had some questions in your survey to your survey participants about it, so it must somehow be related to the levy and the millage and the amount of that millage. And again, I really don't understand how they're separate issues, because pay to participate fees strictly cover coaches' salaries and transportation costs, which come out of the operating expenses. So that's concern number one that I still have. Concern number two, I start with kind of a cliche, but it's important and it's valid, that it takes a village to raise good citizens. And the residents of the village, whether they currently have school-age children, whether they previously had school-age children, or whether they will in the future have school-age children, all have to be a part of the day-to-day function of the school. It is, I feel, one of the main and most important responsibilities of our elected board members to convince the residents of our village that this is true, and that regardless of where they are in their life, empty nesters, just beginning, they must have a vested interest in their schools. Fiscal responsibility is a term that many of you campaigned on, and I think we all agree with that. It is very important to be fiscally responsible, but I also believe and feel that there is also an obligation on your behalf to be responsible to offer every child FAPE, fee-free appropriate public education, which includes extracurricular opportunities for free. I'm concerned that a current board member, or that our current board members, will use the levy as leverage against families. Meaning, if the levy doesn't pass, or the levy doesn't include enough millage to adequately fund extracurricular activities, then the 100% pay to participate will no longer be enough, and programs will be eliminated, because you can't go more than 100%. Why would I think such extreme measures would happen? Well, in June of 2011, Mr. Dosen, I believe before he was a board member, in a letter to the editor titled "Voters Need to Speak Again," wrote, "The reality is, levy failures provide the school board with increased leverage. What kind of leverage could the board wield in the next round?" I'm asking on behalf of all families, of all students, the state champ volleyball player, Anthony Camerari, an amazing runner, and every other student, academic challenge, whatever it may be, I'm asking the board to identify what relief in the amount of dollars a levy passage will bring to families, and to stop putting the financial burden of extracurricular activities on the backs of our families. It is our expectation that pay-to-participate relief will be identified and shared during the public readings of the levy. Thank you.
Good evening. Excuse me. Good evening. My name is Denise Pekowiak. I live at 3994 Dan Road, Medina. I speak as an employee of 19 years. I'm a little concerned to say 19 years because I'm afraid I just may have identified myself as expensive. When I take a look, I stand here starting my 19th year, and I'm proud to continue my career here. And that's what I want it to be. I want to start my career here. I want to end my career here. I stand here because I have concerns about the district's future. Brecksville-Broadview Heights has a strong foundation and has been a progressive district in education in Ohio, where fine education is a heritage. This is not a trite statement, nothing to be said sarcastically. It is a coveted legacy built in partnership with students, community, and staff. Consequently, honesty and respect between all three built this relationship. I'm concerned that over the past decade, especially, the cuts that hurt our children. Let us continue to afford our education to meet the needs of our children instead of continuing the trend where I've witnessed devastation for kids through rigidity in student schedules so they have limited class opportunities. That my class sizes are inequitable where I have 32 in one class and 24 in another, but it's because of the students' needs. They can't have this because they need to be somewhere else. It's the only time we can have PE. It's the only time they can have this. So if you're in my class of 32, well, when we conference, I might get to spend time with you. I might not. Most importantly, we no longer have foreign language in seventh grade in the middle school. We have enormous PE classes. Block scheduling that we once had was gone due to reduction in staff. Kids are not able to participate in sports because they can't afford it or their other extracurriculars. Most importantly, these affect what our students learn. Common Core, love it or hate it, we get to pick how we teach those objectives. I'm proud to say that we design our curriculum based on students' needs. We don't go to curriculum that targets New York, California, Texas, states that where they're financially going to gain. Instead, we meet the needs of our students and we learn who they are. My concern is board member support for the levy and teachers in negotiations. Letters and information in community publications in the past have not always done so. I'm concerned that no board member, to my research, has clarified misconceptions as teachers at 15 years experience are not always at the top of the scale. Teachers at year six don't automatically make master's plus 42. Instead, it's led the community to believe that they're paid at the top of the scale. We have to earn that. We go to graduate school, we pay for graduate school. We apply those skills to our students and their needs. The survey addressed our salary. On one hand, we tout rigorous expectations of our staff, promote their accomplishments and successes they have fostered for our students. On the other hand, it is rumored we pay them too much too quickly. Too often, those in power capitalize on the public's fears. As a board of education, you can either promote an idea of injustice and unfairness by denouncing the financial positives the teachers experience in this district, or you may believe that they are earned. Instead, we need to focus on keeping the quality we have, return to being progressive rather than reacting and cutting programs. We educate Brooksville Broadview Heights children to be innovators and critical thinkers, and we place value in their learning. We work to know them, understand who they are, and make them our priority. However, when we apply similar value to our ability, our worth, to our lives, we are criticized for bargaining for a fair and equitable settlement. We are highly educated and trained. Some believe that those who can do, those who can't teach. We can and we teach, and we in partnership help create strong future citizens for this community. The message that you have portrayed through your actions is please apply if you are passionate about educating our children and passive about your financial future.
Good evening, my name is Darla Marlowe. I live at 8733 Point Drive in Broadview Heights. I am here also to focus on the pay to participate fees that have become a true burden in the lives of the Brooksville Broadview Heights students and their families. It is very disappointing that my husband and I coached 2 to 3 sports for many years before we had 5 children of our own in this district. And during those times, there was absolutely no fee to participate at all. It seemed that as soon as our own children approached the middle school, the fees set in and have now never ceased. I do know that the Marlowes have a unique family. I am in fact going to enumerate some of these because I actually believe that many of these younger parents have no idea. And I'd like to educate them, those people who are unaware. We are paying in just this 1 year. Gymnastics at 600, show choir times 2 at 190, Chinese club at 30, student council at 100, 50 times 2 for 100, diving for 400, AP courses times 4 at 372, parking is $100, wrestling at the middle school is $375, and I would like to add in that there are 4 eighth grade wrestling boys, 4. Cross country at the middle school, $175. Cross country at the high school, $250. Student fees times 4, $300. That totals $2,892, along with DC times 2 at $1,076. And Tennessee trip for orchestra times 3 at $2,400. Also totals $3,476. That also does not include anything like prom, homecoming, etc. And so that total fee is $6,368 for the Marlowe family in 1 year. I also know that many of those fees, like prom, are significantly higher than many surrounding districts. I have a current senior, and I am in a very rigorous search right now for the best college for her. One thing I found out is that GPA and ACT and SAT alone are not enough. Well-roundedness is vital. Activities, clubs, positions in those clubs, and unique opportunities are what allow these students to stand out. These fees alone are often the deterrent in joining. It was also said in the most recent college visit that I had with my daughter that these millennials will have 12 to 13 jobs in their lifetime with 4 to 5 actual career changes. A plethora of skill sets and experiences are imperative. This next topic may seem somewhat trivial to some people, but I'd still like to convey. I want to share my opinion on the opportunities for students to go watch the volleyball team at regionals and state. I was mortified when Mark Meslona spoke on the PA system around 9:30 a.m., announcing that there would be a Spirit bus traveling to Dayton with the cost of $25 per student. And by noon, it was canceled because there was a lack of response. Students had just paid $25 two days prior to attend the regional game. I grew up in Shelby, Ohio, home of the Whippets, and my basketball team won state back in the day. And we had huge signs at our corporation limits, every corporation limit, that stated, "The last one out of Shelby, turn out the lights." I must add that I did the math on the regional bus that departed with right around 30 to 35 people, and I could not understand how the total fee equated to the need. I surely want to give kudos to Mark Meslona, who made a great effort to send the bus. Volleyball team, I know they've left, but I'm just sorry that they did not really get the opportunity to see what it could have been. In summary, the number of fees across the board is negatively affecting the experiences for students. Thank you.
My name is Jeff Marlowe, and I live with her. And I just have a question. I know at many schools, their Board of Education meetings are televised, and I was wondering why ours are not.
I couldn't understand the question.
He wants to know why we're not televised.
Yeah, because we talk about informing the public. We talk about informing the public, and I thought that would be a good way to inform the public on what takes place here at the board meetings. I know they can see the board minutes, but I don't know if they could.
We have the audio on the website.
But... yeah, I don't know if they get the tenor of what goes on here, so I just was curious, why do we not televise it?
We're kind of afraid to put Mike on TV, but...
that's what I was thinking, yeah.
We could take a look at it.
Or you.
Me, you too.
And that would be my recommendation for us to
that's a nice recommendation.
That.
That's a good one.
Thank you.
I mean, we need, yeah, thank you.
No intention of speaking. My name is Tammy Bedozi in 6614 Greenbrier Drive, Brecksville. I wanted to mention that it might be worthwhile. I'm one of those 351 callers who responded to all of those questions. And there's something in the wording of the question that many of these teachers are very concerned about that I think would be significant to your understanding. In fact, there are many questions that may be significant to the data statistically being one thing, but perhaps the response to the question itself, which seemed to be, if I remember the question so important to so many of our teachers about the funding of sports, was the question was, in your opinion, would it be significant to voters? Not, is that significant to you? Which to me might be a different thing and yield a different response in the fallout. I also wanted to mention, as a person who completed that survey, that 351, while he seemed so impressed with that number, I feel so important. It just seems like it may not be necessarily the largest available view. And I wanted to say that in seeing all of those numbers, I think that our teachers may be sitting here thinking that we do not appreciate them. They had no responses to questions. They had no variation for information to questions. So they're saying, well, what do you think about how much the teachers make? And I'm looking at my phone. I'm Googling this. I'm Googling that. How much do our kids pay? I don't know, because I don't have a student in the high school who's paying these large fees. And it didn't even occur to me how many of our students don't even try because they don't want people to know that their family couldn't afford it, which I think is also significant. And to all of us in this room, I think we know that all of this information is about students and that kids are people. And I always present the fact that we are right here and we are right here. And we are not numbers, we are not statistics, but statistically speaking, we look great. And I think that the people who really speak with our kids, these kids are our champions. They point out the red flags. They get us where we need to be. And I think that that is just certainly something I wanted to say publicly. I'm very grateful to all of them. Thank you.
Does anybody else wish to be heard this evening?
I have to say something, or I'm not going to sleep tonight. I should have said this after Matt spoke, because I just want you to know, and would it be inappropriate for me to go into all of the reasons in that, but we had a little different take. At least I was not aware that you have been waiting for us to get back to you with negotiations dates since October 25th. Or that there'd been a second request, and we are having executive session to discuss negotiations after. So I will be looking into that, because I just want you to know that I was not aware of it, and I don't know if who is on the board, but I did not know that. So I just want you to know that. And I'm really sorry.
Item 4 on the agenda is board member committee reports. Financial liaison, audit.
I believe the audit will conclude this week or early next week. They have not hauled me out yet, so I think we're good.
Always a good sign.
We will do fine.
Permanent improvement.
We are scheduling a meeting over 3 weeks from now, roughly, to start some of the architectural review for the facility challenge.
Challenge. Transportation appeals?
None.
Always the best answer. board policy meeting, that update will be number 8 on the agenda this evening, so we'll just defer till then. CVCC?
Just in the idea of transparency, there was a lively discussion at CVCC that probably will be in the Brecksville magazine and people should read. So.
Continue with STEM?
No.
Any other board member reports this evening? I'd just like to add, a couple days ago, we had the chance, a few board members were able to attend this year's NHS induction ceremony. Always a high point in the year. You know, for me personally, this is probably the last class of kids that I was involved years ago coaching, and it's really nice to see where they've come from and what they're doing now. And you know, I have a personal affinity for the swim team. There's a bunch of swimmers up there and stuff. So if you never had the chance to make it, even if you don't have kids, it's worth spending an hour and taking a look at these guys and girls. They're doing awesome jobs. Item 5 is other board business, item A and B in tab 1. May I have a roll motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
Who is the fill-in in B? The point?
Pardon me?
Oh, yeah, you asked about A and B in item 5. B has a blank that needs to be filled in.
Okay.
We need a president pro tem for our January meeting. Mark, thank you. You've had experience doing that important job before. And we've also circulated dates for our meetings in 2017. This year, I think we were pretty good about not changing any of them. Hopefully, we'll be as lucky next year. Questions, comments? Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bernauer?
Yes.
Mr. Dosen?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Number six, superintendent's announcements.
Thank you. I have quite a few tonight. First, I would like to start off by congratulating our preschool on their 5-star rating for Step Up to Quality review that just happened. They come unannounced. Our teachers did a fabulous job under the direction of Dave Martin and Dr. Simsek, so great job to all of our preschool staff. It's not an easy review to go through. I've been through one personally, and so kudos to all of our preschool staff for doing an amazing job receiving that 5-star rating. I'd also like to... I'd also like to point out that we had gotten some preliminary results back from our PSAT, and we had one student, Frank Zhu, scored a perfect score on his PSAT. He's a very sweet kid. I got to meet him today. He's very humble about his accomplishment. I congratulated him and told him I was in awe just to be in his presence, and he just giggled. So it was cute. We also, in addition, we had 25 other students who scored within the 99th percentile on the PSAT, which, you know, potentially could line us up to have a total of 25 kids for National Merit finalists for next school year. So congratulations to all teachers who have done such a great job helping to prepare those kids for that test as well. At Highland, I just wanted to point out, Shop with a Cop was a huge success this year. Typically, we're able to take 3 students shopping. This year, due to the overwhelming donations that we received, 11 kids got to benefit from Shop with a Cop. So great job with the donations there. At Chippewa, they're right in the middle of their Leprechaun Foundation. They work with the Leprechaun Foundations where the kids decorate stockings. They have them hanging up. They will then stuff the stockings, and those stockings will be taken to a local hospital for patients to enjoy that will be hospitalized over the holiday season. So great work at Chippewa working with the Leprechaun Foundation. I'd also like to congratulate brothers Gabriel and Julian Tagg, who won wrestling championships this weekend in the Ironman tournament at weights 112 and 106, respectfully. They are the third and fourth B to ever win an Ironman championship. It's a tournament that typically is invited individual wrestlers, but because of our caliber of wrestling team, our whole team gets invited, so it's really the third and fourth time that anyone has won a championship. So congratulations to both of those students. I'd also like to just, this is hot off the presses. Thank you, Steve, for sending this to me so I can now talk about it. So we had 9 students who were chosen to participate in the Ohio University Honors Orchestra that will take place January 13th through the 15th. It is the first time ever we've had 9 students that achieve this honor. So congratulations to Alexandra Donato. Did I say that right? Donato. Thank you. John Gallick, Catherine Mays, Erica Nye, Jenna Shin, Benjamin Scapura, Jay Young Yu, Carolyn Wan, and Jackson Zubal. So congratulations to all those students. Excellent job. And lastly, I just want to make sure I'm not missing anything. I just wanted to wish happy holidays to all of you. Please enjoy some well-deserved time off with your families. Thank you. Oh, I have one more. I'm sorry. Lastly, if you can join over at CVCC, the Holiday Buffet is happening right now. We have a couple of our students that are part of the cooking program there and are studying in the culinary arts. One of our basketball players, Jared Basil, which I think it's ironic, his last name is Basil, and he's in the culinary program. I think that's so fun. He is cooking. He is cooking part of the Holiday Buffet, so if you can join over there, I know our central office staff is going there on Wednesday to enjoy the food that he will be making for us. So, thank you.
Thanks, Joelle. Mm-hmm. Number 7 is the superintendent's consent agenda, consisting of items A, B, and C in tabs 2, 3, and 4, which are certified, classified, and supplemental recommendations. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
As you said, we have certified recommendations, classified recommendations. The FTE rubric that you received in your board materials has been adjusted to look at the two positions that were out of the BOSS and then moved into our admin support. And then we have our supplemental recommendations where some of our coaching positions, and I will have a comment after you take a vote.
Questions, comments? Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bernauer?
Yes.
Mr. Dosen?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0.
And I would like to say congratulations and best wishes to Sharon Lipkowski. She has 39 years of service. She will be retiring at the end of this year as a bus driver. God bless her.
Item 8 is the superintendent's business. Items A through E, tabs 5 through 9, that include board policies, strategic solutions, PSI services, our options book for the high school, and donations to schools. Motion, please.
So moved.
Second.
Your board policies, this is the second and final read before your vote. In tab 5, is it?
Yes.
Tab 5, we have bylaws, we have group health plans, evaluation of principals, other administrators, privacy protection of self-group plans, patient protection and Affordable Care Act, special ed volunteers, group health plans, privacy, and again, duplicate policies reflected in different areas of our policies. Many of these have been revisions due to law changes, and we've had to update our policies accordingly. The Strategic Solutions Agreement is an agreement with a company to digitize all of our permanent records onto digital storage. We had a company that was currently doing this, that a portion of their company has gone out of business and they are no longer going to be doing that. However, that piece of it, they only did some of our records. This proposal is going to be looking at all of the records that we are required to keep permanent, and that we'll digitize, create a database that we will have access to be able to pull records as needed and be able to get rid of some of those records that we currently have in storage, both at Central Office and at the Comstock Building. PSI Services is an extension of a nursing service contract that will run through the end of this school year. Our BBHS 2017-18 options book is our course catalog that this year, for the first time, will only be available online. We will not be printing the course catalog books any longer. And tab 9, you have several donations made, some scholarship money donated for kids to be able to take the Washington, D.C. trip, as well as some instruments donated to middle school and some special needs startup money for classrooms and fans for classrooms over at Highlands, and a donation into the Garrett Bach Memorial Fund.
Questions and comments?
I'd like to make a comment. I want to thank you so much for pushing the envelope for the options book. I really needed superintendent support, and every year I tried to get that done. And every year I watch hundreds of option books thrown in the trash only after they've used them for 25 minutes. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Welcome.
Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bernauer?
Yes.
Mr. Dosen?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Number 9, Treasurer's Consent Agenda, consisting of items A through E, tabs 10 through 12. Including November financial statements, public records, transfers and advances, appropriation mods, and minutes. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
I would refer you to tab 10 of the agenda, and the financial reports will be on the district website tomorrow morning. In total, our variance through the month of November, 5 months, is $175,000 favorable. We're a bit short on revenues, which is largely timing of, it's exclusively timing of receipt of the TPP replacement supplement funding from ODE. I try to guess on what that cycle of payment is, and obviously I've guessed wrong, but I am confident we will get all of the money that we're anticipating by the end of June, as occurred last year. The investment maturities, just they happen when they happen. I base the monthly forecast off of prior history, and but we will, those numbers are good. On the personnel services, I had put in the forecast on the monthly estimate for the boss retro pay adjustments to occur in December with other retroactive pay adjustments for all staff. That did not obviously occur, so it's caused an unfavorable variance there. As I mentioned last month, the retirement fringes will start to change beginning in January as a result of those raises. When STRS and SCRS make their adjustments, they make those in January, even though we might give raises that happen in August. So that will start to kick that back to a more normal cycle. The other amounts that are there, roughly $250,000, are budgets that are out there available for staff to utilize. They have not been utilized at this point. Part of that purchase services is natural gas, because we haven't quite seen the cold until the past few days. So, and we, although last winter was mild as well, we didn't budget anticipating another mild winter. So the cycles on my monthly estimates or guesstimates will be variable as we move through. But all in all, we're about $175,000 favorable. I don't anticipate there being any significant swing as we continue through the year. The public records training, board members and myself as public records officer are required to attend this training once during each term of office for a board member. You also can have a designee. I have been your designee to date. I attended last week. And if you approve this resolution to authorize me as your designee, I already have the certificate that says I was, and we will be fully compliant again. And interestingly, auditors do ask for these things, which is what caused me to realize in November I needed to hurry up and find one so that we were all covered for the year, because we did have some folks take office recently. So that is that one. Item C, the transfers. Kappa, turf replacement, bond retirement for the House Bill 264. Those are all in the five-year forecast. That's the amounts that you would know to expect, and it is amounts that are similar to what occurred last year as well. The free and reduced lunch student subsidy is five of our six buildings. I don't have the data for the high school yet, but under state law, there are fee waivers made for students who qualify for free and reduced lunch, assuming they've completed that process through our food services department. And I get that information there. The middle school and high school are a little different because courses have different fees attached to those, so we do try to track those accurately. That also is in the forecast, but you'll see one more coming from me at a future point in time once I have the high school data. It's within the budgeted amount. Temporary advance being repaid each year, we move money into the resale account for our schools for workbooks and things like that that are part of the student fees. And once we begin to collect the cash, we repay that. That's just an accounting procedure, so we don't carry a cash balance and take a ding in an audit. The Fund 019, $1,000 of additional grant money in Fund 019, where we capture our miscellaneous grants as well as CAPA funding, and the minutes from the November 21st board meeting.
Comments? Roll call, please. Mrs. Bernauer?
Yes.
Mr. Dosen?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Rick, if there ever is an opportunity to get a unanimous vote, it's having you be the public records officer. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Item 10 on the agenda is executive session for the purpose of reviewing negotiations or bargaining sessions with public employees concerning their compensation or other terms and conditions of employment per Board Policy 0166. Item E, may I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mrs. Bernauer?
Yes.
Mr. Dosen?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. We will now be in executive session. There will be no more public business conducted this evening. Thank you. And have a happy holiday.
Merry Christmas.